episode of Conversation is supported by the generous donations of Klaus Schwab. You can support us too at truthmeets.com. Click on the donate link.
Hello, Beachy.
Happy October. Hey there.
Happy October. It is definitely. I think it's the third today, isn't it? For us, yes. The third of the 10th. Yep. There is only a few more weeks till the end of the year. 12 weeks.
I know. It's 10 weeks. Screaming by. We're screaming by these days. It's, feels like we're in a speedy car.
Tell me about it. I'll tell you what they have out. They have the Halloween stuff out before you know Absolutely, it. All the Christmas stuff will be out. And then before you know it, we'll have Valentine's Day and Easter stuff out. So I think everything's getting rolled into one. I don't think there's going to be any separate holidays.
We start our Halloween or fall, whatever, in September. Because we have Pumpkin Festival, which is a huge festival thing that we do in my town, and it's very zoo-y, and that it comes every October, and we're like, they call us the pumpkin capital of the world, so it's like a big deal. And so they start bringing in the pumpkins like in September, and of course they also bring in all the Halloween stuff as well, so it's we're full on in the thick of it. and people come to get their pumpkins from our pumpkin patches, and it's a whole thing. So the season.
Yeah, nice. And do you do much with your pumpkins aside from making those weird Halloween things?
Well, yeah, I used to always buy tons of pumpkins, and you just put them out on your front lawn or on your doorstep, whatever, and of course there's decorations, lights, all kinds of stuff for the trick-or-treaters that come around, but I would use the pumpkins afterwards, because my dog loved pumpkins, so I would cook them up pumpkin cookies, and sometimes I just slop the pumpkin in his bowl, and he was a happy camper. So this year, I guess I'm just gonna not, I haven't bought any pumpkins, so put it that way. So,
anyway. Yeah, that's it. Whatever. My favorite Swiss pumpkin. Anyway, well, let's officially say g'day to everybody. You are on truthmeets.com. Yes, coast to coast with Beachy and Verilicious. And we've been discussing quite a few things, haven't we, Beachy? Like, health has been a big issue.
There's lots out there to discuss. Yeah.
AI has been a big issue. There's been so much chatter about this and that. But today we thought we'll just have a bit of a look at maybe artificial intelligence in the healthcare system. I remember at one stage we were saying, you got all your symptoms, just use Google Doc, instead of going to the actual doctors. Let's Google our symptoms. Now we can photograph them and it can tell us what it is, because the AI is telling us what
WebMD,
it is.
WebMD, we had WebMD since probably the early 2000s, and I do recall early 2000s, they already started with the internet doctor, or the online doctor, basically, which they rolled it out, but probably didn't really hit big time, of course, until 2020. And so whoever was on that wavelength, who got the memo, they were. And I remember Dr. Phil was kind of a leader in that, because his son was putting together a practice of this kind. And, obviously maybe he had some insider information down there, up there, Mr. Phil. But
I didn't his son was an actual doctor though, right? A medical doctor?
He was a sports doctor. Yeah, he actually, either he was, or maybe if at minimum he was a programmer or a techie type, and maybe he got the doctors and he set up the, all the technical aspects. So, I can't remember. It was a long time ago. Like I said, this was back when I used to watch TV, which it's been at least
in the 90s,
a good, good 10, 15 years, So, and I don't even, is Dr. Phil even still on? I don't know.
We'll find out in a minute.
No matter what your age, you're listening to another conversation.
Or your affiliation.
On truthmeets.com.
Let yourself engage.
And now on with the conversation.
In the art of conversation.
Hello, everybody. It's Beachy and Verilicious, coast to coast, truthmeets.com. We are live. I hope there's some people listening.
Hello out
it's
there.
Friday afternoon. It's Friday afternoon. Quite a nice afternoon. I think there's a few people off today here on the Gold Coast. We have the King's birthday on Monday. So having a Friday off and then having the Saturday, Sunday and Monday, you could have an extra long weekend. So it does amount to something.
You've got a holiday for
the King.
Good old Chucky there, huh?
Yeah, good old Charlie. Yeah.
Is that really his birthday or is it just day you guys set aside for?
Well, because I think the Queen Elizabeth, I think her original birthday was like April, but they, here in Australia, they moved her birthday around in the different states according to where it would fit for the public holiday, really. And so they started about June, I think, for the holidays in the different. So we're the last one to cop the holiday. So our queen, king, whatever it is, birthday holiday, we get in October. So Queensland's always kind of had it later, which has been fine. Yeah, works for us. It's closer to the other holidays.
Another day off. Everybody loves that.
Yeah, exactly. Especially while the weather's nice and it's on holidays. Yeah. So let's go back let's have a look at the
back to our artificial. Dr. Phil is still going. He still has still a talk show, which is hilarious because I remember back when he used to do his show and he said, I will continue doing a show until it's not needed anymore. So apparently we still need Dr. Phil. So,
okay. we still need his valuable insight. Yeah.
Yes.
Even though it's sensational TV these days. Yeah.
Classic. He's kind of like he's turned into what's that guy? Not quite Jerry Springer, but maybe.
Oh, almost.
Was that guy Maury or?
Oh, I don't know. There were so many.
Yeah, there was another one who was.
Donahue was the other one. My mum used to love Donahue.
Oh yeah, that was a long time ago.
He was
the OG.
Yeah, he was. And but, just quickly, we were talking about, just very briefly, we touched on some of the TV shows, and we had McDreamy and McSteamy. Remember was it Grey's Anatomy, the show?
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought I couldn't remember the actual McSteamy's real name, and it's Eric Dane, the actor. Guess what, Beachy? He has got like a degenerative like muscle disease or something like that, and he's now in a wheelchair.
I
was like, wow, he got sick real quick as well. So how's that? So from our chatter last week, all these things have popped up in my news feed or in my, in my general feeds. And I was like, wow, this is okay. We know this is working. And, I thought for the life of me, I couldn't remember McSteamy's name, but when Eric Dane came, now I remember who he is. And I thought, oh yeah, that's right. And then the article panned to like a couple of days ago for us. It was that he has this, I forget what it's actually called, this degenerative muscle. It's almost like multiple sclerosis. And he's basically, it's another autoimmune disease. So he's been knocked about with that. And wow. I was just like, wow, again, there's a lot of sickness out there and it's hitting everybody. And especially if that's sort of, I don't know, is it neurological? Because a lot of that stuff sort of affects the neurological side of it. And especially if you're, you know, if it's affecting your muscles and it's, and to the point where you can't actually walk anymore. So that's pretty sad. And he's not very old either. I mean, I think he's like late 50s, early 60s, quite possibly. Yeah. Old person.
I can't remember. I mean, that was, when was that show on? I mean, that was, because it was back when I used to watch TV, because I used to see it when it first came out. I remember the first season, probably. I watched it pretty regularly, and then I kind of started getting bored with it. And by the time that guy came on, I think I was already, you know, I kind of was off already, pretty much. I saw the, you know, previews and shit like that, but I wasn't really
early.
Watching,
I think it was early 2000s. Must have been early 2000s, because I remember watching it as well. But you know, like you, I'm not really watching much TV these days either.
I do watch the
Gold Coast News.
Yeah, today I actually turned on the TV because I haven't actually turned on like regular network TV, and I found these really old shows like from the early 90s that I used to watch, and it was like, wow, TV was so much different then. I mean, it's like it's like you're watching everything in slow-mo, but it's interesting, you know, the TV, you know, it was like
where everyone can say anything without offending anybody, and you know, because we actually have like a few channels that will play the old, like really early episodes of like Seinfeld. We've got The Nanny, Golden Girls, and all that kind of stuff. Sometimes they have all these different throwback shows, and you watch some of, like, sometimes I'll be pottering around and I'll like, oh, I'll just see what's on TV. And I'll pull up one of those episodes, and I was like, so not PC, like the things I used to say. And I was just cracking up laughing, and I'm like, how refreshing is that? It just takes you back, and I'm like, this is life. This is what life was like. You know, people used to, like, tease each other and make fun, and it wasn't offensive and racist or all that kind of stuff. It was just a bit of fun, you know? So, I kind of miss that. The good old days.
Yeah, we're being reminiscent, but yeah. So you know, getting back to the you know, the AI, and you had, you know, talk about television now. What we're fast forwarding, and maybe this is not such a fast forward. Maybe it's already, you know, had begun, you know, a few years back, or maybe more, about the gal who's a total AI character, not, you know, a real person, yeah, who's starring in her own TV show. So what
yeah, tell me about, actually, that. You know what I was thinking about too? The funny thing about that was, like, there was a time when the video games was so good, like they got really, really good because the characters became so real and they were realistic, you know, and and then that transformed, and then you got they started using the CGI, the cinematic stuff. And now, I mean, obviously it's all part of a type, I guess that's the way AI grows. But now I found this information, because when we were talking about AI, there now is a actual actress who's fully AI. Her name is Tilly Norwood. And she is going to be the first AI actress that is going to be signed up by an agency. That's who gets paid that? I guess it'll be the creator. So
that's interesting. Yeah, it's a whole new faction, I guess, of, you know, someone who can create. You can be everything. You could be the director, the actor, the, you know, CGI person, and all, you know, you just present your completed piece, and that's again a kind of what everyone is saying about the AI, that it's, you know, cutting out jobs, so you don't need all these, which kind of like what happened with the whole computer industry is, it just keeps collapsing on itself. You know, we used to need lots and lots of programmers. Now we don't need as many programmers.
Don't need them. Yeah, exactly. And
it's kind of, you know, everything gets retooled, and you're cutting out certain positions, I guess you could say, and not just in, you know, this sort of environment. I mean, it seems there's a lot of environments that are being affected, which is, you know, it's like a, it's been, like I said, it's been happening for quite some time, you know, and we were talking about the medical industry, which, you know, I think we even, you know, the doctors, I mean, I don't know, maybe they're not even going to have to go to medical school anymore, because if they got a computer AI that you just type in, which is what basically they do, I think, anymore, is they type in your symptoms and pop out a treatment. You know, it's not really rocket science anymore. Why do you need to go to years and years of medical school if,
Yeah, but all that information has to be put in there, though. That's the thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, how would the AI access information unless it was already, already popped, put in there?
Well,
and they would have to update it. They would have to update it each time. So every time you come across something, it would have to update it. Because I know if you go into, I'll use Google as an example, where you can use the lens on Google. You can take a photograph of something and it will provide you with all the answers of what it could be. And it'll relate back like photos from particular articles or publications. And also it could be it, or it could go, say, YouTube channels or anything like that. And you could look up, you could look into any of those to see what your issue is. Say I take a photo of this spot that's on my leg, and then it'll come up with all these different things, what it could be. It could be rosacea, it could be dermatitis, it could be psoriasis, it could be skin cancer, it could be anything, you know what I mean? And the AI is going to tell me what it thinks it could be based on that photo that I've taken, and it'll just pump out all these different images and articles and so forth for me to have a look to see which is closely related to what my thing is on my leg, you know what I mean? So it's like we still need a professional like a doctor or a dermatologist or someone, surely. We can't just be relying on just what AI health is telling us, you know?
I mean, if you consider that, I mean, I don't know if I am going to offend anyone, but I think that's what the doctors are doing themselves. I mean, it's clear that, and it's not that they're out there looking at the internet for this stuff. I think, you know, they have their own tool that is within their paradigm, and it's programmed for them so that it includes their pharmaceuticals that go along with it, and their procedures, their treatments, and their, you know, because, you know, again, and we've talked about this before, is that the medical industry, they keep a tight rein on their diagnostics and their treatments. And if you go out of the, you know, the parameters, they come after you. As a doctor, you can get in a lot of trouble as far as, if you're not prescribing the right medication or you're doing it experimental, quote unquote, treatment or, you know, there's just all these, you know, lines they got to stay in. And, couch it in the insurance documents and, you know, of course, as we're finding out, it's a lot of it has to do with the bottom line of dollars, which, you know, the almighty dollar is always up front and center. So, I think that's a real already going on. I don't think that's so, it's not going to be a big
way
jump.
Out there.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, the World Economic Forum has an article in regards to healthcare and healthcare systems, and that talks about how AI is transforming healthcare. And it just talks about that what they were talking about was the healthcare is below average, and adopting AI could actually help their healthcare system. So what is it called? Oh, yeah, here we are. So it's called the United Nations Sustainable Development Goal, and it's doing this universal healthcare coverage, and they want to do this by 2030. And they talk about how 4.5 billion people lack access to essential healthcare services, and they're hoping that the artificial intelligence could help bridge that gap. So like you were saying before, the AI technologies are already helping the doctors. So they just want to incorporate more and more of it with people to be able to access this AI digital health solution. Yeah.
I disagree wholly with what they're saying as far as that people don't have access to that they don't have good, because there's all kinds of alternatives. Let's say they, you know, I don't know why we have to call them alternatives when they were the OG. You know, there's Chinese medicine, there's, you know, Ayurvedic, there's all these alternatives to the AMA. And I just think they're trying to push everybody into their, their paradigm, and hence control, because, you know, that's what they do. I mean, they wake up in the morning and they're like Pinky in the Brain. I mean, they did it with COVID. I mean, they stood up there and said, hey, we're the big honcho here. We're going to direct everything, and we're going to take it down to, you know, what medications you can use or what's authorized. I mean, it was pretty much a takeover. I mean,
yeah, but this is the thing though, like when they're doing these studies about the AI in the health system, how can you have an AI tool that can successfully detect 64% of epilepsy brain lesions, which are usually missed by, you know, they say, oh, it's previously missed by the radiologist. So the AI has been trained on MRI scans over X amount of adults and children globally. And then that's all obviously been coded in or whatever it is. You understand more of the background to that than I do, Beachy, having your background in computer science. But it's able to integrate all that. So now they're saying the AI is much more better than the human eye in detecting.
No,
even though we're using, even though we're using these machines to help detect all this, like I don't.
Well, but again, the AI. What we need to understand, you know, everybody's being, I think, they're pretending that this AI is like a person with, you know, cognitive skills. I mean, what AI does is collects data. It's just a data collector. It's like going out into the internet and grabbing everything that is related to this subject. And then it puts it together. And yeah, it does a good job of collecting that data and putting it all forward, but it doesn't necessarily always come out with, a critical thinking, conclusion, such as like what you're talking. I mean, if you're looking at, I don't know about you, but when doctors are looking at their pictures or their whatever their scans are, like, who knows what that really means? I don't think they really know either, And so how, if you're, somebody is programming this information of data into a computer, they still have to know, like you said, if they can't figure it out just themselves, then how are they going to program it to figure it out? I mean, that's my take on it as far as that particular.
Coast to coast, you're with Beachy and Verlicious. It is 3:10, 3:10, 2025. Now you were saying about the medicinal side of it.
Yeah, that's like a very traditional. And that example that we were talking about as far as brain scans and what it looks like, that's a very specialized thing. But, if you consider the whole entire, human body, everybody's different. Everybody has variables. Yes,
there must be a lot of data that's been put into these to be programmed for an AI to go through that whole thing. That's quite extensive when you think about it.
If someone comes into the doctor, let's just take something very basic like a headache. That could be, you bonked your head and you got a pain. That could be you got a stress headache. That could be you got,
you just bumped
electrical
your head.
Issue. Yeah. I mean, there's a concussion there. I mean, yeah, there's all these things that it could be, but you it's like when I come in and I say to you, Verlicious, I have a headache, you may have a totally different, like your headache may be, it just hurts behind my ear, or it hurts, on my forehead, or it hurts inside somewhere, or it hurt, there's like a bazillion different ideas and types. It's so abstract. It's like, who's to say, And even though, the way that they do it is like, well, this many people came in and they said they had a headache, so we treated them this way. And when they went home, they were fine. And so that's what we're going to do now. It's like a numbers game. And I think, sometimes people do go in there and they say, I got a headache, and they give you something and you go away and it doesn't take care of it. You got, it's still there, whatever. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've been to the doctor and I've, told them my issues and they sit there and, they have no clue, right? And they want to give you all these tests and, everybody's going by some numbers and, they screen you. Well, all these people who have this many, their numbers say this means this, right? And it's like, well, how do you know? How do they really know?
How does it break it down without knowing like so many variations? It could be like 1,000 different variations. But I was going to say, all you have to do, Beachy, is take a Tylenol, paracetamol.
Yes. And then there's that.
Yeah.
I mean,
the article from the World Economic Forum also talked about the unlikely pairing of AI and traditional medicine. And India was actually the first country to launch a traditional knowledge digital library, where they used the AI tools and they analysed all the Indigenous medical text. And it said they also are exploring how AI and their, what's the medicine they do? Ayurvedic, the field yeah. which combines the ancient Indian medical and the, and that herbal stuff that they do. I'm just going to say that because I'm so terrible at remembering names and how to say names when it comes to that. So they're trying to put that together to come up with herbal formulations to help tackle modern disease. And I thought that was quite interesting because also in Ghana, they're helping the AI model to learn, identify and classify medicinal plants. And then in South Korea, they're also doing it to use to do it with traditional medicine compounds for blood disorders. So it's like they have to feed the AI a lot of information for it to, and like, you know, what we're saying, like, is your headache just a headache or it could be something else? You know, how would an AI thing detect if your headache is associated with a brain lesion or something like that? Like, it would have to be fed thousands and thousands and thousands of information for it to come to that. And then it comes back to, well, what are the doctors doing then? Are doctors really being trained to be doctors, or are they just going to be trained to read what the AI tells them?
Exactly. And then, that's what I'm
and
saying.
And then also treat them according to what the AI says. So what's the point? And I think the point is the fact that there's a lot of money involved in the market research, and also when they plan this out, like how much more money is going to be taken for, you know, the industry. Because, like, if no one's going to school now, they're just going to be going to school to learn how to read AI.
Well, and the first thing that I'm sure everybody has heard this before, but in American, you know, our Western worlds, whatever, our doctors are not allowed to say that they can cure anything. It's like legally a crime to say that you can cure something.
Yes, we have heard of people saying they can't curing cancer, and then they end up in prison for like 5 years or whatever. Yeah,
right. So, okay, for me, I don't know about you, but for me, it's like, okay, well, why would I want to go to somebody who's saying they cannot or they are not allowed to cure anything? And again, you can go into, you know, what's the meaning of the word cure, or, you know, it's that could be a big rabbit hole in and of itself. But just the fact that they have legislation, that to me says, well, why would I go to a doctor if they're claiming that, if that's in their bylaws or whatever? I mean, we read the Hippocratic Oath, remember last time?
Last week, that's right.
There's a Hippocratic Oath, but, you know, of course, that's one thing, but then you have this other thing that they say they're not allowed to cure anything. Even if you absolutely do cure something, like you said, you could end up in jail, and there's lots of people who have suffered that fate or just ran out of business, basically taking your license away, your livelihood is gone, your career is over. So to me, again, if you've got an AI program, whatever, that they will only put in those things that do not cure you. It's not a better system. It's just their system is now going into a database, basically. So, and that goes for all AI, if you think about it. I mean, obviously, if all our books go in there, if all of our quote unquote knowledge is in a machine, well, you know, what about, you know, the, how do you know that's, I mean, because technically the internet today is an AI machine, right? We put something in and it goes and it pulls out what it finds. It's not the way that we think of AI, but it is pretty much AI because you don't have to go look through a ton of books. You don't have to go find these books. You don't have to even know where these books are. You just type it in and, you know, you think about, you know, just maybe 50 years ago, people had to go into the library and go through a lot of books.
Read a book.
Had to go through all kinds of other, you know, places to get the data, you know, not just a book. Maybe they had to go talk to people. Maybe they had to go actually do some, you know, hands-on experimentation, whatever. It's just the progression of things and stuff. So, and of course, like you said, the medical industry is just fraught with, I mean, it's only 100 years old. So, you know, what about the, you know, hordes of stuff that happened before that, that people were dealing with their issues, you know, in a different manner altogether. And they seem to, you know, have a...
They seem to deal with it okay.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
But it's, yeah, I just found it interesting that they say, you know, the AI in healthcare is exploiting machine learning. So, you know, we talked about algorithms, data analytics and automation, and it's a paradigm transition. So they want to improve the medical decision-making, diagnosis and treatment outcomes with the potential to boost productivity, care quality and ease costs. I don't know about the ease of the cost, though. It sounds quite expensive. But I think potentially they want it to really transform it to be AI-driven and with the integration of it with the existing systems and stuff like that. So, I mean, it doesn't matter which way we look in the world today. This is going to be part of it again. So, you know, like you're saying, we have it, you know, we have AI basically on our phones, on our laptops, on our desktops.
Well, yeah. I mean,
just they're, if you think they're about integrated into everything.
It's very scary.
Healthcare system as well, you know, retail.
If you think about like your last call to a government institution or, you know, even your bank anymore, and you get, you know, somebody or not somebody yet. Basically a machine asking you questions like, what do you want to do? How can I direct your call? And, you know, you have to go through this bot before you can actually get a person to answer your question. And typically they, you know, direct you to an internet or, you know, your computer online, you know, because, you know, they can't be bothered anymore to talk to you. So... And you know how frustrating that is. You can't argue with, you know, if you're, say, getting a diagnosis from the doctor and they say this, it's this, and then you're going to get this medication or this treatment. And, you know, if what if you don't agree with that? What if you don't want that treatment? You're not consenting to that. What happens then? And it's harder to argue with the freaking machine, right? Because, you know, is there going to be somebody there still that's going to, you know, that you can talk to? I mean, it's like right now, I feel like a lot of our services, we don't have anybody to talk to. It's like,
all automated as well.
Yeah.
No one's answering the phone anymore. You have to press one or press two. And you know, I seriously, whenever I have to do that, I completely zone out because there's probably like five or six choices I have to go through. And then, after I pick, just say I pick one, and then there's another, from this you have to pick one, two, three. And I'm like, oh, for crying out loud, can I just hit zero and speak to someone? You know,
right.
It just, because you kind of zone out, because by the time you like, I've gone into one and then three and then back to here and then back to there, and then they go, oh, now you've been put into a queue, do, 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 and this is the wait time. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I just wasted 20 minutes finding where I need to go.
Exactly. Yes. It's quite frustrating and to think if you're going to go, you know, like you said, all this internet doctoring, like if you have and I know people who do it now, who they, you know, talk to their computer and show them, you know, where it hurts, you know. I mean, how do you know that there's actually another person on the other end? That could be a CGI doctor that's talking to you. I mean, it's creepy.
Yeah. And the fact that the diagnostics that they're doing, right, it's all AI powered. But they're saying that the accuracy rate is fantastic in them. So in diagnosing diseases, including cancer, heart issues, neurological disorders, and it especially in medical imaging, which is basically your scans done. And I had digital imaging done years ago when I had a scan done for my kidneys. And whoever it is that does imaging actually explained to me what it is, and I knew exactly what I was there for and what was happening. But when I actually went to see the doctor, because that was the whole idea, it's like the health of, you know, my health was being explained to me. I'm like, well, can you please explain to me? I've got the imaging done here as you guys requested. Can you explain to me through the imaging what this means? I'd already been told this, so I kind of knew what I was expecting. They couldn't even tell me. They just wanted to put me on some sort of treatment plan which had nothing to do with anything. And I was like, I'm not a guinea pig, you know. I'm like, if you don't actually know exactly what that image is telling you and you just want to put me on some medication just because I'm a guinea pig, you don't even know what it's going to do, whatever, you just said, oh, it could do this, it could do that, but it might also do that. See you later, you know. It's like, what are you even doing? Like, how can you even call yourself a professional, you know, if you don't even know yourself what you're looking at?
Well, and that's also, you know, the side effects of these medications, side effects of procedures, side effects are, you know, they make it sound like, oh, it's no big deal. Well, I'm sorry, side effects, they should not call them. I mean, even side effects, yeah, it is what it is. I mean, if you think about it, it's an effect. It's a side effect. They make it sound like it's, I don't know, somehow we've been programmed to think that's like, oh, it's not a big deal, don't worry about it, you know? Yeah. And yet, but, it is an effect. It's an effect.
Well, it's the gonna, effect, you know, is, they what know about it. The ethical, what about the ethical effects in all this? Like the concerns that we might have about safeguarding our private information, and it's being used, you know, what we don't know digitally how it's being used by AI. You know, how many times we've heard, oh, there's been this data has gotten out, or that data is, it always happens here in Australia. They, you know, it's either a bank or or the telecommunications, someone's had a data breach. It's like, really? It's, you know, like, right, how do you safeguard all that information? Information, but it's all piled into one thing. And if you want the AI to learn and be integrated in the healthcare system, it's going to know anything and everything about everyone. So who gets to regulate that, and who gets to look at all that information? Because like I said to you before, if I get a spot on my leg and I'm not sure exactly what it is and I can take a photo of it, what's to say that it's pulling up images of someone else? It's supposed to be a private patient, you know, and that's someone else's information that it's pulling up and you're having access to it. That doesn't seem right, does it?
That sort of stuff happens a lot too. I mean, there's, you know, even in those medical dramas that I used to watch, there was always, you know, an episode where somebody went in there and they to do a surgery or something, and they had this, you know, the wrong patient chart or whatever, and you know, they got the wrong treatment, you know, like, you know, that could be kind of,
yeah, it could go good. 7 ways to Sunday at that stage. Yeah, exactly.
Something lopped off, or, you know, cut or taken out of your body that, you know, wasn't supposed to, or, you know, again, it's, it's like a business, you know, you can't. Yeah.
Well, you could go in for that tummy tuck, Beachy, and then you can still come out with, like, you know, big boobs.
Right.
I mean, I didn't ask for them, but I might take them as well. Yeah. So just joke.
Well, again, that's the thing, you know, if you're under anesthesia, that's why you need an advocate or somebody who, I don't know, it's so bizarre. Everything that that you read about that, you know, the things that can happen in the hospital and all their, and you do realize the third leading cause of death is medical mistakes.
Yeah, misdiagnosis and mistakes.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. And they're the ones who give you those numbers.
Scary.
You've reached another top of hour on Truth Meets. Go to truthmeets.com to sign up and participate in our forums and conversations.
Truthmeets.com, you're on Coast to Coast with Beachy and Verilicious. 3:10, 2025.
It's October.
October.
But yeah, again, even, you know, as far as the medical industry, obviously it's fraught with issues there that I still feel like we are already in that because, you know, they do have something called the Diagnostic Manual of, you know, issues, whatever. It's basically, you know, what they look through. It's, you know, to figure their diagnosis. They've had that for a long time. So, you know, they use that in the psych ward as well as, you know, the physical medical ward, however, you know, whatever your issue is, they're always checking a database. So
yeah,
it's halfway there.
Someone still needs training. Like, you still need training to be able to have that AI assist you as well. You can't just have that full AI making those predictions for your patients that need all that sort of stuff. How's it supposed to know? You know, it's not actually looking at you like a real person would, or, like feeling your pulse and all that kind of stuff. It could probably feel your pulse. I don't know. It could probably put some, you know, electrical thing to read your pulse. But in a sense, you've got, like, my dad, for example, who's got a pacemaker put in now that is monitored by the doctors at the heart hospital. It's all linked. Even my sister, I think she can correct me later if she's listening. She can get on her phone, like, if something's going wrong with dad's pacemaker, you know. So I guess in a way, AI itself could be helpful in that sense, you know, if there's something that's wrong, and it can have that sort of alertness to if there is a problem for it before it goes any further. But I just found it interesting, going back to the World Economic Forum, the AI learning machine that they're talking about in one of the articles here that can detect the presence of certain diseases, was made by AstraZeneca. That's interesting.
Well, I find it the other word too that they use a lot with the AI is the learning. Like, it's learning. It's like, it's not learning. It's just getting more data. It's not learning in terms of, you know what I mean? It's like, you're just getting more information. And, you know, there's sometimes there can be confusion with so much information. But I mean, yeah, I mean, just it's a good sorter. And I've, you know, heard lots of people talk about, you know, they're playing with the AI and they're asking it questions. And again, it's like, you know, it comes back wrong, you know, so, and they know it's wrong, you know, people who have, you know, have experience or they have you know, studied these things before, you know, the normal way, whatever. But so the real danger is like for somebody who has, you know, doesn't know, you know, you can't, if you don't really know that stuff, how do you know if it's right or wrong? And they keep pushing it like, well, it's so smart and it knows all this stuff, but it only knows what's been put in there, you know? And again, it's, to me, I think a very slippery slope that we're falling down. And just like if you know, go back to when we were younger, at least before we had cell phones, or you know, the GPS, like we would just get in our cars and drive. We would get directions, or we would look at a map or something, and or sometimes you would just kind of figure it out. You just figure it out as you went. And we're not, you know, now it's like you just plug it in and it tells you where to go. It's like we're being, our brains are not getting as much exercise as they used to, because, you know, obviously that's just one example, but there's so many other different examples that we use our cell phones for, to, you know, all kinds of things. Look, everything is, it's more, like, you know, even our memory, you know, because we don't have to remember because it's, you know, something we can look at, you know, instantly. We can look it up. And there's not an exercise there. We're just kind of, our brains can be, are turning to mush because we are not using them. Just like any other muscle in your body.
Yeah, what's the point in having a profession then? You know what I mean? It's like you've still got to learn stuff. Like what? Are we becoming that lazy that we're going to? But the AI is being programmed by somebody,
right?
So, but you know, and then how can that person not regulate how it learns? I suppose I don't know what you would say, or how it follows algorithms and so forth. How could you not have control of that? How do you write it so that it just takes it over? It's like Skynet. Like, are we seeing, like, you know, the Terminator come to life sort of thing? But you know, the study that they did in the UK, they had found that just 29% of people would trust the AI to provide basic health advice. So it's not, you know it's 29%, fairly, they're not even hitting 50. So there's a lot of people that just goes, yeah, I guess, but I would still would rather see someone who knows what they're talking about. And I guess this is where, you know, if someone in a profession, you would hope that they would be qualified for what they've studied in. You know, if I want to go and see a general doctor for general stuff, am I going to go and see, you know, another a specialist, say, what have I seen before? A dermatologist, right? You know, he's a skin specialist. So, you know, I would hope that they would be knowing exactly what they're looking into and what they're talking about, being a specialist. I wouldn't want them to just to be looking up their chatbot or their whatever AI platform they're looking at and, you know, Googling my symptoms in there and saying what it is. Like, that's very unprofessional.
Well, yeah, again, it is up to us to accept or, you know, take this on. Of course, you know, just like anything else, if you are not happy with the service, you go elsewhere, right? And I think that leads me into, you know, the next, I mean, I don't know about you, but I have certainly lost a lot of faith in the medical industry since COVID, and it really started way before that because I had some other issues, and you know, it was kind of you know, I've just, and it's just being with other people while they were in their you know, doctor's appointments or when they were in the hospital or whatever, and just seeing the stuff that goes on in those places, it's just, I really have very, very little faith as far as chronic issues. Obviously, if I got a, you know, I broke my ankle. I had to go get it put back together, whatever. I mean, those kinds of things are there, you know, they can, I have success with that. So I've, you know, trust them on that. Although there were a few things that I didn't necessarily agree with on that whole situation either. But at that time, you know, I didn't know as much as I know now. And, you know, again, we always do better when we know better. But I guess my point is that, you know, we have to decide for ourselves whether or not we want to take these services on. We need to probably do more research on our own and, you know, try to, you know, if people want that, then, you know, sure, they can go for it. But, you know, people need to speak up.
Yeah. But do you think that that period of time that we had in our life not too far long ago during the pandemic, do you think that had a lot to do with it? Or do you think it was well before that actually happened and that maybe just put a focus, more of a focus onto it? Because, I mean, if I see doctors dancing and nurses dancing in the hospital instead of taking care of patients, I would be wondering what the hell's going on.
But I agree.
That would have really put the spotlight on that.
I think a lot of people did wake up and there was a lot of, hey, you know, we need to look at this more closely. We need to, you know, do some more, you know, of our own research and make sure that, you know, and it all goes together, you know, with the food and the air and this, you know, all the water, all the stuff that we ingest and our clothes. I mean, we talked about this, our clothing, you know, all the activities that we do, or not do, such as, you know, getting out and to exercise and be in the sunshine and breathing and all that stuff. You know, and to me, it's more of taking some more responsibility for ourselves rather than outsourcing to somebody who, you know, could be not necessarily in our best interest. And just for the, again, I always go back to, you know, everybody, we're all different. We all have so many variables of experience and issues in our lives. And, you know, we don't have it. I think it's naive to think that we have a one size fits all, you know what I mean? Mm. For everything. Cause we have, you know, we're individuals and we all have.
Yeah. And one thing that we don't really, we don't really touch on it cause we sort of really glaze over it and we say, oh, someone's on some sort of spectrum or they're taking medication, this, but mental health has taken a big, like, it's big, you know?
Yes, yes.
And that's been put in the spotlight, and especially coming through after that time period as well. And, I mean, for me, I kind of think it was more, was it the anxiety along with all these other psychological things that they put people through to heighten all that, you know, the anxiousness that fear, and but how do they do that? I mean, you know, that I hear talk about ADHD, like there's so much ADHD. I mean, what is that? That's attention deficit disorder, is that right? Attention, something like that.
And hyperattention.
Hyperattention. But how does that become a mental illness? Like, how is that a mental illness? It's like, is it?
Well, actually,
you know, someone who needs like more activity. Is it brain activity? Like, what constitutes that as a mental illness?
Here's the thing. Every, I, you know, was have been listening to some, again, quote unquote alternative doctors, but everything begins in our psyches. Like if you're constantly freaked out about something, you know, like fear, you know, your body goes into fight or flight, you know, you're always stressed out. It's going to turn into a physical ailment eventually if you keep in that state. It's like everything starts in your psyche or your mind. You know, I've said that and people get like, oh, your mind is not. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like your mental state has a lot to do with your physical state as well. You know, they're connected. It's not like you, have these chronic things solely on, I mean, yeah, you could be eating improperly, but why are you eating improperly? Maybe you stress eat. Maybe, you know, you're stressed, so you eat too much sugar or whatever. I mean, I'm not saying it's all
we
sugar,
used to but, have that saying. We used to have those red frogs, you know, the lollies at school. Yeah.
Right.
You have a red frog and you're spinning out of control for the rest of the afternoon. And you know that's the sugar combined with the with that red dye that they put in there, you know. But that's not ADHD. Do you know what I mean? So it's like what causes that? I mean, it's quite common. I mean, I'm on the ADHD Australia here at the moment having a look. 1 in 20 Australians, and that's children and adults. That's quite a lot. You know?
Well, and I remember this is going back to the 90s where, I had an issue with like stress, obviously, and I would get panic attacks. And I was, you know, furiously looking around to see, you know, what might be the issue, right? And, you know, of course, they tell you don't drink coffee, don't drink caffeine, whatever. But, you know, and there was also at that point a big thing about, you know, because I was. I was very much, it wasn't like I was trying to be a vegetarian, but I pretty much was a vegetarian, right? I didn't eat a lot of meat. I was, you know, basically pasta and salads and, you know, breads. And there was, you know, kind of a trend where they were saying, well, you know, if you eat too much carbs, bread, you know, wheat. It wasn't the celiac, you know, they were getting to that probably 20 years later. But back then it was like, oh, that's causing your to have sugar spikes basically because it's just too much sugar. Right. And so then, you know, I started eating some more meat and cutting back on those, you know, the breads and the pastas and the carbs, whatever. You know, not necessarily vegetables, but or even sugar for that matter. I mean, it was just, you know, cutting down on the bread and that kind of calmed me down a lot. So it's just interesting how your chemistry, you know, gets involved in all that stuff too. And it's not so much that, you know, who knows? I don't even know what they attributed to it back then, but then, you know, fast forward, everybody's got celiac disease or they're, you know, gluten intolerance and, you know, all that sort of thing. So, I don't know.
Yeah, but I kind of think that because, you know, I've been told I'm lactose intolerant. I obviously have a problem with certain wheat. If I have flare-ups from wheat, like I have allergies. But, you know, I think it could also be in the process itself or what they're processing it with, because a lot of our foods are processed with chemicals.
Right.
But if I was to eat like a high protein, when we used to make our pizza, we would use the 000 Caputo flour, which was a high protein. I think it was like 15% protein or something like that. And then, 15 grams of protein in your serve. And it was certified organic, which means that, you know, nothing, no chemicals would have touched it, including in the processing. Now, I don't have a reaction to something like that, but I would have a reaction to, say, just your generic white flour. And it's like, and I do think it's got to do with the chemical processes, because how can I drink a red wine, but I can't drink a white wine? So it's like, what are the processes that are happening there, you know? And I really think a lot of it has to do with the chemicals that have been put through our food. Because if we were to eat as natural as possible, with little to actually no chemicals in our food, I think we would fare quite well.
Right. Well, and I think my point is, though, you know, like I said, going through all that stuff and you know, just all the different things that I've gone through since then, after the break.
No matter what you say,
you're listening to Conversation
or your preoccupation
on truthmeets.com.
You can practice every day.
And now, back to the conversation.
The art of conversation.
Go ahead, Beachy.
Okay, real quick before I forget, my point is, like I said, you know, everybody has their, you know, issue, you know, with, you know, whatever it is, whatever the food is that causes them problems. But, you know, you have to take note of it. You have to recognize it. You almost have to, like, be a little scientist and experiment and, you know, narrow it down to what your issue is. You know, I mean, I, you know, again, you know, fast forward, I got to the point where it's like I just stopped eating everything. You know, it's like you just gotta like clear the decks and just start all over again and introduce things one by one and, you know, see what bothers you and what, you know, what you can do. And I'm still going through that because, you know, they change, you know, your products are changing constantly. So you can never, you know, you can never trust anything. You still got to always read labels and you have to, you know, just be very vigilant. But like you said, you know, the closest you can stay to, you know, as natural as possible. Yeah, just everything, you know, they call it clean, as cleanly as you can eat. You know, that is a big help. But, you know, every now and then, you know, you go out to dinner and, you know, it's disaster, you know.
But yeah, exactly, because you don't know where stuff is coming from or what they've put in it. But that brings me back to ADHD, though, in that sense where it's what I remembered it to be was the high level thinking, you know. So I'm thinking these people are quite smart, could be potentially really smart in the right environment. They have, like, they could have ideas, just overflowing with ideas and so forth like that. But over the years, have they changed the way we're looking at this and calling it a mental illness because the way it is from the environment, not so much from what we eat? Because, I mean, it says it's hereditary. I mean, I don't really know. Is something like that hereditary? Well, I'm not a doctor, so I don't know. But just reading all that kind of stuff, I know that you can be affected psychologically. You know, we can have mental illness created psychologically, like, you know, having anxiety, the high level of anxiety can be a type of mental illness depending on which way we're going with it. You know what I mean? But I used to think that the ADHD was more of a developmental thing. It wasn't, you know, if you grew up in an environment where you were just, and it's just some people have that high capacity to learn, have the high capacity to remember. Some people have photographic memories. Some people can remember numbers. Some people can remember, like, a whole book, if they read a whole book, you know, just things like that. Or they can just play an instrument. They're just like that. They've never had to learn before. They've just pick it up and they can do it. And I don't always think that that's necessarily a bad thing, but why now are we looking at these things as some sort of, you know, spectrum of mental illness? I don't,
It
sort of boggles my mind a little bit with having things that maybe were a little bit more positive in that sense, where if children were of that higher developmental state or stage, that they had the ability to deal with a lot of things, you know what I mean? And if parents knew how to feed their child the correct things. So
I think, here is another example of, you know, when you put your child into school and they want you to sit still and do what they say, when they say, it's all very structured. And you know, when you look at little kids, they're wiggling. They got so much freaking energy. They're running back and forth. It's like, you know, and especially after, you know, like we were cracking up because we went out to breakfast the other day and, there was these little kids out there, and you know their parents probably just bought them a stack of, you know, pancakes with, you know, all kinds of sugar and, you know, whatever on top. You know, you can just see them. They were just bonkers. They were running back and forth, and luckily they had this. We were at the airport, this little small airport near the house here, and they, you know, it's got a little patio so you can watch the planes coming in, and they have those little things for kids to just kind of run around. But this one little girl, she was just running back and forth. She just ran back and forth, you know. She had so much energy. I was cracking up. But, you know, this is how little kids are, you know. They got so much energy. It's like, wow, you know. And I think, you know, you try to put these kids, you know, to sit down in a classroom, I think it drives them nuts. I really do.
I think it'd be good at sports. That's what I'm saying. Like if you,
your child
is good at something, you would put them in the direction of where they're really good and where they can really focus. And I don't necessarily agree with the fact that medication needs to be involved every single time. You know, we go back to the food and the environment. Like they've got to be the big factors that we think about. But as we know, you know, the medical industry, the big pharma, it's all about money. It's all the dollars, you know.
Well, and again, like I said, one size fits all. You know, we shouldn't put everybody into the same box. And because I was a homeschool mom, that just worked out fabulous for me. And a lot of the other kids were kind, you know, the people in our group was like that because a lot of them were little boys who, yeah, they had all this energy. They couldn't keep still and they wanted to put them on medications and their mothers were saying absolutely not. So, and they wouldn't let them, you know, come to school. So it was like, you know, it was just, you know, a natural thing for them to choose that because, you know, they didn't want to put their kids with those medications. And, you know, these kids are all very well adjusted and, you know, they're grown up now and, you know, they're off and doing their whatever they do. But it's just interesting to me, you know, that they've got all these diagnoses for, you know, little kids when, you know, they're just little kids. It's just that they make them do all these things that are
the developmental stage. I mean, you know, we always say you've got to crawl before you can run sort of thing. Walk, crawl, walk, run sort of thing. And then, they're just, I don't know if they're going to let little kids be little kids anymore. You know, I think there's just getting worse, riding on, the parents these days with everything, and which brings me to, you know, anxiety. Now, is it a mood disorder or is it an actual, you know, mental illness? Is it a depression thing? Is it a bipolar? you know. But, you know, what we understand anxiety is worry and fear and unease, and people just feel anxious and stress, you know. And I guess that's normal part of life, but when it goes beyond, you know, the regular thing, then it's obviously a little bit more than that. But what gets me is that they're putting this now through as a common mental health issue. So anxiety disorders. And I didn't know that there were so many. And once again, you know, those years that brought this forth, I really think that what they did in certain countries and in certain places, especially where we were at as well, it can really play a lot with people's minds and how they deal with things. And yeah, look, I mean, I get a level of stress and a level of anxiety, you know, but it's not to the point where I'm going to need medication for it or anything like that. It's just a normal response to a situation, you know.
Right.
Why does it go over the top? You know, why do you have a generalized...
When you're talking about children, again, when my daughter was little and, you know, we had our little routine and before I quit my job, she was not an early riser. Like, she liked to stay up late and, you know, she didn't like getting up in the morning, which... You know, obviously, and for me, it was like, well, you know, I was at work all day and I'd come home and, you know, it was great to be able to spend some time with her. So then, you know, I wouldn't necessarily, cause you know, like people would put their kids to bed like at 7 o'clock, you know, and it's just like, okay, I just got home and I'm going to put my kid to bed. You know, it was just, it didn't make sense for me. But on the other side, you know, it's like you had to get up in the morning and, you know, take her to daycare. And she didn't want to get up, you know, and I would, you know, try to push it back as long as I could. But, you know, then I had to go to work. So I, you know, we had to get up at some point. Right. And anyway, so it was always a big struggle for us. And I think at that point I realized, you know, if, you know, because I would be frustrated and stressed out because it's like, I got to get to work and, you know, I got to get this kid up and dressed and whatever. And it was always such a fight. And of course, she probably was feeling that too, you know, that I was stressed out. So, you know, she would get stressed out. And then when I would take her to the daycare, she would start crying as soon as, you know, cause she knew she was going there. And it was just, yeah. It was just such a, you know, a huge, trauma thing, you know, like all this, you know, stress. And, and so, yeah, and so it's like you quickly realize that, okay, I'm stressed out. So why wouldn't she be stressed out as well? It's like they pick up on your, you know, your stress. They, how can they not?
On your vibe and how you're doing it. Yeah. And I think, Beachy, like, you're like every other parent. I mean, you're a dog mom, and I can only understand from an animal point of view.
Right, exactly. It's with the dogs too. It happens with the dogs as well. And,
but yeah, you see parents like really struggling, and you kind of think, well, how did my mom do it, or how did my great grandmother do it, or how did they all do it back then? But there was also a support network. You know, I had my grandma, my brother had a nanny. To a certain stage, and we were still in a family environment because the nanny was like an auntie, you know. And I think it's really that support network that you have around you. And if you don't have any interest in your children and it's just all about your life and you don't integrate them as in life together as a family.
Right, right.
I think that's where a lot of the separation happens. I mean, you know, we hear about, you know, animals having separation anxiety. I think children have that as well. So that's, you know, they're sort of normal things, but when it gets to a point where it's too much, then it becomes a disorder, I'm assuming. Yeah. In that way it becomes, you know, and then you get your phobias and, you know, your different mood swings and stuff like
that. For sure. It makes sense.
We can really play on that. Yeah.
Yeah, when you're young. Because you don't know. Yeah, and you
I really think a lot of it can be changed by the environment as well. In some cases, yeah, I get that there's probably medication that could be needed and stuff like that. But it shouldn't be the go-to. I feel like that a lot of the things these days, the medication is the first go-to before anything else.
Right.
And I think that should be the last, like the resort, like, you know, it should be the last resort. It shouldn't be the first resort.
Well, see, if you think about it, okay, so like we were talking about, you know, the doctor's got this nifty tool. He just throws in, you know, when you go to the doctor, okay, you get there, they bring you into their room, you talk to the nurse first, and then they let you sit there for freaking ever, and you're, you know, whatever.
That's anxiety then, right there.
Yeah. that's freaking out a little bit, but, you know, regardless. So then the doctor comes in, and what is he? He's there for like 5 minutes, you know, and, you know, he's already writing you a prescription, you know, whatever. It's not like, you know, because like you've been listening to these, I don't want to call them homeopathic doctors or naturopath doctors, but they're kind of energy doctors, you know, and their stance is that, you know, they ask a lot of questions. It's like they're sitting with you for an hour asking you all kinds of, what do you eat? How much do you, you know, they want to, I mean, and doctors used to ask you that a long time ago, but yeah, I don't think they, now it's just like, you know, they just don't train them like that anymore. Because I do remember, you know, I guess I don't really remember, when I was little, but, it seemed like, you know, you had some interest where the doctor would ask you a few more questions than just, you know, what's your insurance or, what's your issue, you know, quickly. And, you know, you're in and out of there in 10 minutes after he gets there. So even though you've been there for an hour waiting for that 10 minutes, but it's still, you've got nothing, you know, it's very, they don't probe. And so, like you said, you know, so all they're doing is throwing a few bits of information. They might have your chart, you know, they might have some, your past reason, you know, your past things that have you've been in there for, but, you know, they really don't probe. They don't really do a deep study on you, and how they don't have time, you know, that's not part of their, you know, their rules or whatever. Cause I know a few people that are doctors, and, another thing too, is that, you know, they also, if they're in, you know, private practice, which not a lot of them are now anymore, but before, when they go to medical school, they don't teach them how to do a business. They don't teach them how to, you know, do payroll or, you know, doing all that stuff that you got to do, you know, run an office, whatever. They have never given them any of that kind of information. So they could be totally stressed out on, you know, their money issues. So, you know, again, they've made it so easy for them to go into like these big corporate groups. So, you know, somebody else can handle all that stuff. And all they do is, you know, just talk to the patients. And, you know, there's just a lot of, I don't know, I guess you could call it, making the system more molding, you know, it's just already set up. You don't have any leeway as to if you're gonna do things like I said, you know, like have, you know, sit down with a patient for an hour. You just don't got time to do that. There's just nothing. It's not in the protocol. So, I mean, like you said, there's so many things you can just go on and on about it, but,
yeah. But it does. It look. It's got to work for you, you know. And it's like mum's been. It's been really good for mum. Like she's had the doctors, which is, you know, my sister took her to a wellness clinic. And now she's seeing her back to her Chinese herbalist. Plus, she was also trying to get all these natural therapies. And, you know, I was thinking, is it becoming less and less? But people are looking for it more and more. Even my mother-in-law, she goes and sees a homeopath for certain things. You know, at old age, obviously, you have to see certain doctors, but they're really picky with the doctors as well, because there's a lot of doctors would just put them and just not even, like you say, they don't even listen to them. And yeah. I think that's where all these clinics are now popping up, where they're trying to entice people to move away from just your general doctor you're in and out in like 5 minutes, and then they really want to encourage more health and well-being for people, right? Which is fine. I don't have anything against that, because for myself, if I was to find it after the break.
No matter what you say,
you're listening to Conversation
or your preoccupation
on truthmeets.com.
You can practice every day.
And now back to the conversation.
The art of conversation.
Truthmeets.com, coast to coast, beachy and verilicious. It is 3:10, 2025. And we are nearly at the end of the year. Can you believe it? Unbelievable. But let's finish off. Oh, we'll just finish off.
Yeah.
So for me, it's taken a while to find a really good naturopath, you know, someone who will really sort of gel with what I need as I get older as well, because I know that things change, your diets change, this and that, but I tend to find that now I'm trying to do my own searching for things, and what worked before doesn't work now, and I'm less inclined to go to the doctors because of the things that have happened previously and you know, and the things that have just happened. And I don't know, is there a level of trust with some people? I mean, you know, that's what it comes down to for me. I kind of just go, oh, wow, I feel sorry that you're going through that, or I'm sorry to hear that this is happening to you. But are we feeling that we're not trusting now because of the way the industry is working? You know, and is this why it's not so much that people aren't going to the doctors or allowing doctors, but do we trust the doctors who are just going to use the AI tools? Do we, you know, are we feeling that maybe we are not listened to now?
And it's not bad news. You know, I don't think it's bad news.
I think it's just times are changing.
Well, exactly. And I think it's more about, like I said before, we have to take up the task, because who knows us better than ourselves? We have been with our bodies our whole lives. So we kind of have, you know, the inside track, so to speak. We're the expert, you know? And so I think we just need to pay more attention and do some more, you know, experimentation. Like I said, there's basic things that you can do. Obviously, we just spoke about, you know, keeping the natural food, making sure you get plenty of sunshine, fresh air, exercise, and grounding, you know, breathing, and more importantly, just listening to ourselves, because our bodies will tell us everything we need to know. I think it's a two-way, you know, you're getting data from yourself, you know, and you go and you read things. And again, you know, sometimes it's hard because, you know, you start reading all this stuff and you think, oh, I've got that. But, you know, it's a little bit, you know, you got to make sure that you, you know, don't fall into that. it's a bit of a trap to be a hypochondriac, you know.
Yeah.
But again, I think we are our own best, authorities, I guess you could say. And it does take practice, and, you know, you just got to start doing it. And I think, again, experimenting and noticing and taking notes and, you know, following up, you know, if you, something, you know, is, you know, chronic, you know, they say usually that chronic things are, can be, a mind thing or a psychological thing where, you know, if you've got a bad relationship that maybe, or an abusive relationship, maybe, you know, you need to think about that, adjusting who's around you. I mean, maybe it's not just a bad relationship. Maybe it's just someone that's a very negative person. And, you know, there's a lot, I mean, it could be, that's a whole nother subject. So again, it's your mindset and how you're, you know, how you're viewing your life, how you're perceiving your life, as well as how you're responding or what do you, you know, talking to yourself. Like if, you know, if you're looking at things in a negative way, that maybe if you just switch up the things that, you know, even if it means, yeah, like I said, you know, getting out and just de-stressing or breathing or walking or whatever you like to do, you know, you got to get out. And
funny about that, because
I'm so happy.
Yeah, well, I had a conversation with two people this week, actually. A lady I met up at the Seaway, and someone else was at one of the local parks here as well. And the ways of people saying what's grounding for them, like for me, when I say I'm like, I feel grounded when I'm at the beach, my feet are in the sand or in the water, and you know, you're just surrounded by the beauty, and you can sort of can take in your environment, you know, you sort of feel, you just feel at ease there. Yeah. You can just, so the guy that I met who was saying to me, for him, the grounding is a bit, he goes, we don't walk around barefoot enough. And I'm like, well, there's a lot of concrete that you don't really want to be stepping on that. That alone. And he goes, no, but I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. And he says the whole dirt, grass, you know, is so good for your, for you. And he says that's, you know, when we call earthing and you feel grounded in that sense. And I said, well, what's the difference with what I do? And he said, well, there's different. He said, like, yeah, I know what he's saying. I know where he was going to. It's a different energy transfer between the components of the minerals and stuff like that. So it will, you know, whatever you resonate with, I suppose, it comes to that. And then other people just like visually or feeling the wind and just, you know, that type of thing as well helps them. Being in a certain spot, it helps them as well. So yeah, that's where that lady, she's like, I often like to come here and let my mind wander, you know, and this is at the Seaway. Mm-hmm. It was just beautiful where the river meets the ocean sort of thing. And that's a good spot for her to just, you know, just to enjoy the day, whether she's watching the sunrise or whether it's the middle of the day or towards the end of the day before the sun sets, you know, she feels the wind on her skin and she can just forget about, you know, all her problems. You know, she's got, I was just talking to her, it's amazing, like, that people, there's people that are lonely out there. They don't have, it's very hard for them to find companionship. And I'm not just talking about, like, having, like, a mate, but as in a friend as well. And, you know, I often hear people's life stories and I've just met them, like, in 5 seconds. I'm like, I know everything about this person. And it tells me that there's been a lot of loneliness with people, and you know, that's not necessarily a mental disorder. I think that's just the way the environment has panned out and what has happened in the time period.
Isolation, can be just as can create illness as well. You know, the being. Like you said, you just need connection. You don't necessarily need, you know, like a, you know, a romantic partner, but
no, even but just connecting and talking to people,
touch, yeah, exactly. You know, a handshake, a hug, a kiss, yeah, whatever. That is very important too. And I was listening to a gal who is a, she's a somatic expert, whatever. She's like a PhD, whatever. And you know how when the babies, you know, they always tell us babies need touch when they're first born. Well, we need it all our lives. It's not just babies.
So do you remember that phenomenon that that happened with the free hugs? Do you remember that? It was years ago. Remember that? And they say about hugs, like just hugging somebody and having that human connection can really make someone's day, like just to give someone a hug. It's so true. And with the baby thing, I've noticed that over the years there was those pouches. My mum used to have one. And, you know, you see a lot of the Asian women when they work in the rice paddy fields when they have the babies in the sling right close to them. Because they feel their mum, you know, they feel their mum's heartbeat and it's quite close. You know, it's like having like the Joey in the pouch for the kangaroo and the and all that sort of thing. Yeah, there's a reason for it. You know, we're created for that touch. Yeah, and to feel that connection. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and you know, like I said, this woman explained, you know, how very important it is. And, you know, like you were saying, we were talking about going to the doctor. A lot of people, that was the only time they get touched. So you hear about a lot of people who just, you know, I think that's the whole giving over of, you know, ourselves to these doctors. That's part of it because of the that connection. And, you know, that's the only person that ever, you know, got that close. So it's kind of sad when you think about it, but you know, this is
this is the way it is.
This is where we are, and then
where we're at in the world.
And 2020 just like threw it into like overdrive. I mean, we were already you know on that path to you know total disconnection, but we got thrown right into oblivion. But you know, the good news again is I think a lot of people did observe that, and now it's interesting about, you know, because before, yeah, I never used to hug people, you know, like, you know, people hug a lot more now. It's like, and you know, if you haven't seen someone for a while, you know, they want to hug you now, and it's just it's kind of funny because, you know, it's like, even though, like, you know, like people that I've known my whole life, you know, and even though you know, you see them pretty regularly, but it's like they want to hug you now every time, you know, you see them. So,
yeah, my friend used to laugh at me all the time.
Yeah.
Because you're not a hugger, because she used to hug me and I'd be like, and you'd have a photo of me like, you know, shying away, like as they're trying, hugging me. It's like, too close. I have a funny thing about molly coddling and all that kind of stuff, but I'm actually okay with it. I make fun of it now, but I mean, yeah, that's just the way we are. That's that human connection. It's and it depends on what we've been through. So
that old English stoicism, you know, we totally had that growing up. We hardly ever hugged or touched or, you know, it was, you know, buck it up, don't cry, you know, don't show your emotions.
Always got to have the strong eye. Exactly.
Yes. So,
exactly.
Crazy. But anyway, yeah, we've covered a lot here and I still feel like, you know, we barely scratched the surface. So
that's right. That's what these chats are about.
Continue it again next week or,
Exactly. But in the meantime, we hope guys have had a great Friday or Thursday or wherever you are in the world, enjoying yourself. And you know what?
Go out and hug somebody this weekend.
Give yourself a hug. Give yourself a hug as well. Beachy and I will give each other virtual hugs.
We'll pretend we're on the other coast at the same time. Feet in the water and on the sand. It's my favorite thing to do. I couldn't live without it.
We couldn't think of anything else.
I know, right?
It has been good. It has been good. But, yeah, thanks, everyone, for listening. Truthmeets.com. Don't forget to jump on our website and have a look at some of our shows. We have quite a few there you can listen to depending on what your flavour is. If you like listening to Beachy and myself, it's Coast to Coast. Beachy has her couple of episodes of her Remember Who You Are, plus I have some with Fitting Room as well. We still have so many people we want to sort of connect with and talk to and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We hear you guys are out there. We'll get around. The year's not over. Yeah, so it's pretty good. But until next time, everybody, thanks for being on with us on Coast to Coast, truthmeets.com. Beachy and Realicious, we are signing off today on the 3rd of the 10th, 2024. And we will catch you next time. Have a good one. See you later.
Good night.